There is no one who can disagree. No, the state is not capable of protecting Lebanon. We must put efforts to make the state able to protect Lebanon. We must not surrender to this reality that the state cannot protect the Lebanese people. They always wanted us to live in Lebanon under the slogan, the strength of Lebanon is in its weakness. What does this mean? Its strength is in its weakness means its strength is in what it says, meaning Lebanese, their only job is to speak, to make speeches, to sing, to make poetry. That's their strength. Is this Lebanese strength? This kind of strength does not protect anyone, either in Lebanon or outside Lebanon. Lebanon must be strong and its state must be strong in order to protect the country, to protect the people, to protect the inhabitants of the country. In one of the periods, the state was not only weak, but it didn't have the will to confront. And unfortunately, sometimes it was part of a conspiracy with the enemy, conspiring with the enemy. Here I'm referring to the beginning of the 1980s. Now, I don't want to go very back far into the past. Now, when the Israelis used to enter the country, they used to get cooperation sometimes from inside Lebanon. Now, those youngsters who believed, who saw that their country was under a threat and who saw that their people and their civilians are in danger, those youngsters left their homes, left their families, left their schools, left their universities and went to live in the hills and in the valleys in southern Lebanon. And I think some of the women know these youngsters. They're not, of course, unwise. Some of them are very smart, very intelligent. So why? Why they go to the hills and valleys to defend the country? Because they have a sense of responsibility. And there's a human value in the souls of these youngsters, of these fighters. This is what makes them go to the valleys, because on Judgment Day, they'll be asked a question, and from the humane perspective, they cannot put up with this, their country being humiliated and their people being humiliated and their country being assaulted and Lebanon being transformed into a country for the Israeli enemy, for the army of the Israeli enemy, or the Mossad, or the security services of Israel. And the same goes for the families. The same goes for the families of these youngsters, their wives who put up with this type of living, the mothers, the fathers, the sons, the daughters who put up with this type of life. They put up with this because they are part of all these sacrifices. Because the resistance has this sense of responsibility, the resistance was able to continue, and in addition, it was able to achieve a lot of victories and make a lot of achievements. Now, I don't want to, go very back far into the past. The day before yesterday, on Sunday, usually the Prime Minister of the enemy, the Prime Minister, Israeli Prime Minister, at the beginning of the meeting of the government, makes a short political speech. Now, what did Mr. Olmert say on Sunday? Mr. Olmert will be leaving very soon. He's leaving in a very, very humiliating manner. What did he say? He said the following. The Israelis, this person, as I'm saying, is speaking in the opening of a session for the Israeli cabinet. Here we have the Israeli political and military leadership being present. So we had the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the head of the intelligence, the security services. What did he say? He said a couple of things. First of all, he said, this issue of the big Israel from the Euphrates to the Nile, the huge great Israel, he said this is part of an imagination. He said, let's stop this lying to the Israeli people about this great state of Israel. This is one thing. Why did he say this at this time? I'm going to go back to it. The second thing he said, it's very clear that the regional balance of power in the region is beginning to change, and the way to stop the change in the balance of power is to make an understanding with the Palestinians, make a settlement with the Palestinians, and make a settlement with the Syrians. So there's no military alternative here. Olmert did not refer to a military alternative. in order to prevent this change in the balance of power. He didn't speak about a military alternative. The third point he said time is not on our side. He said if we don't hurry up and do these settlements, each day which goes by, we'll be very sorry for every day which goes by in the future. Here I'm quoting what Olmert said in a cabinet session for the enemy. Now, these three points are very clear, what Olmert said. In summary, Olmert, after this long experience, of course, he wasn't very long as Prime Minister because he was involved in the July War, but he's an old Israeli politician, as you know, an old Israeli politician. He said there's a new situation in the region. He said the regional situation is not for our benefit. He said that the internal situation is not for our benefit. He said the possibility of resolving the issues militarily is not possible now, and the only way to solve these issues is by settlements. And the dreams which you used to live, we must forget them. These are all part of an imagination which have no place now in reality. This is a summary of Olmert's words. Why is Olmert saying this now, at this time? Previously, Netanyahu, after Israel's defeat in the year 2000, Netanyahu said that the Israeli project had ended. After Ehud Barak, the Prime Minister at that time, withdrew the Israeli troops from Lebanon in that humiliating way in the 25th of May, the year 2000. Now, my dear sisters, what's the reason behind this change in Olmert's rhetoric? Is there, of course, a new multipolar world? Israel was getting stronger and stronger, and it was occupying more and more territories before, even when there was a multipolar world. Yes, we do see international developments, but these international developments haven't clarified. Are the Arabs stronger now? No, unfortunately. Day after day, the Arabs are absent from all the regional and international developments. Where are the Arabs? Where's the role which the Arab countries are playing? Not because they're my friends, but Syria, who is trying to play a certain role, Syria, who's trying to impose its position. If you take Syria out as an exception, all the other Arabs aren't playing any role. One day you see Turkey, the other you see Iran, then you see France, Europe, America, of course. But where are the Arabs? There's a new Arab situation which scares Olmert. No, there's no new Arab official position which Olmert is afraid of. The only development which happened in the region ever since the year 2000 until today is the development and the victories and the achievements of the resistance movements in the region. This transformation began from the year 2000 when Israel was defeated in Lebanon. This is a truth. Now, if we take this issue away, the resistance movements, of course, their stance and their victories. On the contrary, all the other elements, all the other factors help Israel to increase its strength, to increase its oppression, to increase imposing these humiliating conditions on all other sides. Why has the project of the Great Israel ended? Allow me here to be very brief. Usually when I speak, I take very long, but I don't want to take very long with you because it seems you're sitting down in a very hot temperature. But the Great Israel, we have three Israels, if we can say. One is the Great Israel. The Great Israel means geographically, which idea is from the Nile to the Euphrates River. And this is what the Israel flag symbolizes. If you see the two blue lines and the, of course, Star of David in the middle, the two blue lines represent the two rivers, the Euphrates and the Nile. This is the Great Israel. Now, we have the Big Israel, which is, of course, smaller, which says, no, we don't take Jordan, Syria, parts of Iraq. The Great Israel means Palestine historically, but a strong, strong, capable country which imposes its conditions on the whole world and practices hegemony on the whole region. This is called what? The, of course, Big Israel. Then we have the normal Israel. This normal Israel, we don't know what's what it borders, what its borders are. These are the three Israels. Now the great Israel, we have many, many elements. And now I'm not one of those people who says this is the only one. No. We have, of course, the issue of the Arab people withstanding the Arab armies previously, also withstanding many pressures, the war of 1973. Yes, but the factor, if I want to be very modest here, what the last dagger in the heart of the great Israel was the resistance in Lebanon when this resistance defeated Israel in the year 2000. After that defeat, there was no more greater Israel. So if this enemy cannot stay, not just in South Lebanon, but behind the blue line, it's not able to put up with the losses in the blue line. How can this enemy occupy and control a very, very big geographic area, which includes the Nile territories between the Nile and the Euphrates River? The greater Israel has ended in the year 2000. Today, Olmert has confessed to this. He's confessed this project has ended. The big Israel, of course, year 2000, we're over now, of course. Let's go to make reconciliation and settlements. And then the argument was a big Israel in the borders of historic Palestine. This was the project, this was the plan of the Israeli parties, of course, self-governance in Gaza and in the West Bank, and that was it. But developments did happen after the year 2000, and the most important development was the Holy Intifada in Palestine and the resistance in Palestine, which imposed on the Israelis to withdraw from Gaza. The significance of the withdrawal from Gaza was that it withdrew even from historic Palestine. The Intifada imposed on Israel to build a separation wall, meaning that the territories behind the wall are Israel has given up these territories. This means it's withdrawn from historical Palestine. This is geographically. Now, I can say, of course, that there have been two defeats for Israel. First of all, after we withdrew from Gaza, and second of all, the separation wall. This is the two defeats for Israel by the Palestinians. But the great Israel, the strong Israel, the hegemonic Israel, very modestly, I say, the big Israel, see here, I'm not speaking about the great Israel, the big Israel project, this project was overthrown in the year 2006, in the July 2006 war with Lebanon. Today, Israel is just like the Arabs were previously. It talks and it makes the threats day and night without doing anything, without any action. This is the reality. When did Israel speak with all this rhetoric and make all these threats? Previously, all its wars were surprise wars, but now they need to speak. They need to use this language of threats and this harsh rhetoric because they're incapable. They want to build the morale in their people, in their army. This is why they're using this rhetoric. Today, now we're facing the last project, the normal Israel. The normal Israel, which in one of the days, it was preoccupied with the Arab governments, with the Arab people, with the Arab countries. But today, this Israel is preoccupied with some resistance fighters in Palestine and in Lebanon. This is what preoccupies Israel, resistance fighters in Palestine and Lebanon. And it confesses that there's a balance of power with these groups, and Israel fears that there will be a balance of power, a change in this balance of power, if the resistance fighters in Palestine and Lebanon gain some advanced weapons. So we're in a very, very advanced period in the history of this struggle. Now, when we want to, at this period, and in light of all these realities and all of these facts which I spoke about, yes, we are all concerned to protect our country, to defend our country. And this needs national behavior, nationalistic behavior, to behave in a national patriotic manner with all of these issues. And now I want to enter in the last points. Before I enter these last points, let me tell you something which I truly believe in. At the end of the July 2006 war, and in the midst of the developments in Lebanon, and even during the 7th of May, and after the Doha Agreement, and after the formation of the current National Unity Government, I can tell you that the resistance, which was always subject and is always subject to attempts of destruction, has overcome all of these experiences, and the main dangers which are facing the resistance have become of the past. We've overcome these dangers. Israel, from 2000 to 2006 till today, Israel with the Americans and with all those who stand with it, the Israelis are trying to strike the strong ticket, which is the resistance. They wanted to destroy, to get rid of the resistance. This is what they wanted. And in all ways, in any form, until now they've used many different ways. Assassinations. They assassinated Haj Imad Mughniyi. This was not the first assassination. We saw the Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, former Hezbollah Secretary General, Sheikh Raghib Harb. Many of the leaders of the resistance were assassinated. But this did not affect the resistance. On the contrary, the resistance increased in strength. Its motives increased. Its determination increased, because the resistance believed in its direction, in its ideology. Concerning security, for 25 years, this hasn't affected the resistance. I'll tell you, they won't be able to affect the resistance. Now, of course, they are competing with each other in the elections of the Kadima party. And they ask Mrs. Livni, if you receive a telephone call at 3 o'clock in the morning and they told you, when the head of the Mossad told you that the Secretary General of Hezbollah, there's a chance now to kill him, would you make a decision to kill him? She answered and said yes. Mufaz also said the same thing. Okay, thank you very much. No problem. For any of us, whenever we are martyred, this means we've ended our life in achieving our best wishes. This is our wishes, to die as martyrs. This were the wishes of all the previous martyrs, and these are the wishes of us who are living today. But what I want to tell them is that the resistance from 1982 until today and in the future does not depend on one person. Whatever be the opinion of this person, whatever, however much this person may be important, the resistance is more than just about a political leader or a military leader or a field command leader or a group of commanders. The resistance is a popular movement which has the capability of producing leaders on all levels, leaders which come from the experience of suffering and pain and true effort. So the security perspective, the issue of assassinations, this plan, this type of practice won't lead to any solution. Concerning the military alternative, before the year 2000, they used all military alternatives. In the year 2006, they exhausted all their military alternatives. They tried to isolate the resistance as well. They tried to create divisions between the resistance and the people. And here's the importance of popular support for the resistance and all factions supporting the resistance. Here is the importance of the state supporting the resistance instead of trying to disrupt its efforts or trying to freeze its strong points. The state must support the resistance because Israel was trying to isolate the resistance. Now, the last issue is the attempt to drag the resistance into an internal conflict underneath different titles, whether it be loyal groups, March 14, March 8, or under sectarian titles, under sectarian excuses. This is what happened when they killed, of course, the martyrs, many martyrs from the opposition. What they wanted to do was to drag the resistance into a conflict. Now, anyway, even in the 7th of May, we overcame this. I want to tell you once again, we are Lebanese and we have different perspectives concerning May 7, but I'd like to say that the previous government, some, of course, put effort, some put pressure, countries, regional sides, put pressures on the Lebanese government to take the two decisions which targeted the resistance, to drag the resistance into a war. I refer to the two decisions about Hezbollah's telecommunication network and the head of security at Beirut's airport. The two decisions, the aim of these two decisions was to drag the resistance into a war. This could have led to a civil war and to dismantling the army and the overthrow of the state. But what some of the opposition did, on May 7, blocked the road to the civil war. And this kept the state alive, kept the army alive. Some say this is the worst scenario, this is the worst thing that happened in Lebanon. On the contrary, what happened on the 7th of May saved Lebanon, its people, its army, its resistance. It saved them from one of the worst conspiracies. What happened on May 7? It saved us all. And after that, we have insistence. These same Lebanese groups, of course, they had insistence on confronting, on having internal conflicts. Now, what is our responsibility now? Let's go through them very briefly. First of all, we must address our disagreements via dialogue. And here, I recommit myself and I welcome once again the national dialogue. We saw the session today. Of course, I'm sorry I couldn't be present there. I would have loved to be there present at the national dialogue table, but we have a serious problem, serious security problems with the Israelis. They are monitoring us and at the same time, they are afraid of us. One day, of course, they prevent their ministers from going overseas, they prevent businessmen from going overseas. Then they, of course, told all their Israeli tourists in the Sinai Peninsula in Egypt to leave Sinai. This is good. We don't deny, we don't say we're going to do anything. We don't say what we're going to do. But let me say something. Whoever kills Imad Mughniyeh must always be in a state of worry and anxiety. It's very normal for me not to go to Abda Palace to the National Dialogue session. I would have had the honor actually to be with all the Lebanese political leaders. I would to be part of these efforts to, of course, address the situation in Lebanon. Second of all, I'd like also to express my regards to President Michel Suleiman for the speech he made today at the National Dialogue Table. This was a national speech. It shows a feeling of patriotism, of nationalism. It shows, of course, a feeling of unity. It shows real intentions to solve the very, very important destinal issues of destiny of Lebanon. I want to also express my regards and speak very highly about the written statement which was made after the session of the dialogue. There is one point which I want to stress on in the National Dialogue, what was said. I want to speak about the point in the statement about the media outlets, of course, verbal attacks between rival political leaders and political figures on the media in Lebanon. In the Doha agreement, this is stipulated. We abided by this, but some groups, some figures actually, on the other side in March 14, did not commit to this and continued their verbal assaults on the media outlets in Lebanon. There are certain Arab sides who did not commit to this. If the Arab media outlets, if the local outlets commit themselves, we have some Arab media outlets actually which practice the ugliest type of sectarian hatred the Arab Ummah has ever seen. of course, using the sectarian issue in the ugliest way, manipulating, taking advantage of the very, very light events to bring about conflicts between the Lebanese and amongst the Lebanese. The most important article is something which is very, 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 very important issue for us, is to stop these attacks, these verbal attacks, trying to create hostility between one another. What happened in Tripoli was, of course, a problem between the March 14 and March 8. But if we look at the media, who said that what was going on in Tripoli was between Alawites and Sunnis? Who gave it a sectarian label? Was it the opposition or the other team, the other side, March 14? They create this hostile position between these religious sects, and then the volcano is about to erupt before we come and, of course, put out the fire. This complicates the issue. The most important thing is to stop this hostility between religious sects. If we stop this, problems can be solved more easily. I'll give you an example. Of course, we saw Lhasa, a village named Lhasa in Lebanon. A small disagreement, the old one actually, which goes back before March 14, before the days of March 8, before the days of Hezbollah even, before the days of all these groups which we see today. A disagreement which is decades old. What happened? There were two sides in this disagreement. This is an old disagreement, and it's about a area. We can solve it, of course, in an understanding. This is the whole issue. But there are some groups who want parliamentary elections. The problem is we have parliamentary elections, so each small disagreement is used. How do we gain votes? We gain votes by using the religious sect. What was said is that this small village of Lhasa is threatening coexistence between Shiites and Christians. This is not true. But the whole issue is they're using any small incident for electoral purposes. Now, the other day when General Aoun spoke about one of the newspapers which says the pilot Samer Hanna was killed, and he called for a trial, all hell broke loose because of what Mr. Aoun said. What this newspaper said is said by many different newspapers. Yesterday, of course, a Kuwaiti newspaper, what it said was that those who were behind the killing of Saleh Al-Aridi, the member of the Lebanese Democratic Party a few days ago, were from southern Beirut. Southern Beirut, which is an area known to be for the resistance, for the Lebanese resistance. Why? Because this newspaper is part of the US-Israeli kitchen, which is cooking all these lies, all these conspiracies. We've made a decision not to respond, because if we deny, we must deny every single day and make statements every single day, because all of this is based upon lies. Because we face such media outlets, we did not stop on these issues. But after that, it changed. Now we must, of course, file a complaint. We must file a lawsuit against this newspaper, which is accusing us of killing someone in cold blood. Because this is a lie. Today, when we speak about a small incident and we try and exaggerate this incident, what happened in Ta'labaya and Sa'daya in the Biqa? Two guys passed to each other and they fought each other, and there was some killing which happened, there was fighting which happened. Why? Why are these issues exaggerated? Because of the media. The media is exaggerating every single incident. Now, if we agree to stop inciting on hostility and hatred, I tell the Lebanese that we are all capable of addressing all the issues, all the events in Lebanon, because these events have two explanations. The first explanation is that one of the reasons behind these violent acts is inciting hostility. The other reason is someone is intervening and is trying to bring about these conflicts. Who is throwing these hand grenades? Who is behind this? Which Lebanese in the middle of the night throws hand grenades in areas of population? These same groups are the ones who go to Saleh al-Aridi and kill him. Saleh al-Aridi, the member of the Lebanese Democratic Party, he's known, his role is very much known, and many people don't want the Druze to be on agreement. Many don't want the Lebanese Democratic Party to agree with the Socialist Party, Progressive Socialist Party. Many don't want Hezbollah to have an agreement with the Progressive Socialist Party. The goal of this assassination might be violence between the political parties, and hence the resistance entering into this fighting. There are some who use these grenades on the streets, and there are some who use verbal grenades on the media and in newspapers to complete the role. This is what we're facing today. So what we must do is to stop this incitement of hatred and hostility. Then we can address all of this. Let's, of course, make the truce and reconciliation in Tripoli a permanent truce, the truce which happened and the reconciliation which happened between Hezbollah and the Progressive Socialist Party, a permanent reconciliation, and then we'll continue. Reconciliation does not stop here. Reconciliation goes to Beirut and goes to all Lebanese areas, because what is required is for there to be an atmosphere of reconciliation in Lebanon. This does not mean to change our alliances. Each person can stay in his alliance, but what we're saying, my dear friends, let's not fire shots on each other. Let's not practice conspiracy. Let's not, of course, make people open fire on one another. We have the democratic way. The democratic way will judge what will happen. We have elections, we have dialogue, we have people, we have supporters, and we support the populace, the population. This is the goal. A atmosphere of security, atmosphere of stability, calming down the situation, to hold elections in the appropriate manner, parliamentary elections. There are certain figures, just to win the elections, they need to bring about a civil war. This is the biggest betrayal which anyone can do. Let me assure you tonight, any reconciliation which we make does not target anyone and does not target to isolate anyone. As we said during the day of the reconciliation between Hezbollah and the Free Patriotic Movement, we said that this understanding does not target a religious sect. It is not, of course, a political alliance. And actually, today in the statement, written statement after the national dialogue, they stressed on abiding by all decisions which were made in the previous dialogue in 2006. If you compare the decisions in the dialogue in 2006 and the understanding between Hezbollah and the Free Patriotic Movement, they're the same. Now, had they cooperated with us, we could have bought a lot of time. Today, when we make reconciliation with each other, when we make reconciliation with the Progressive Socialist Party, if we make reconciliation also with the Future Movement, such a reconciliation does not attempt to isolate anyone, nor does it attempt to break an alliance. We have our alliances, we have our relations. And here, let me enter the point before the last point. Concerning the dialogue, we are serious in this dialogue, but of course, what I said, I think in the 14th of August, I said that some Lebanese, we must listen to the request of some Lebanese parties, those Lebanese parties who requested to sit on the table of dialogue. Today I want to say even more than this, and this is what was said by the representative of Hezbollah at the table of dialogue. We insist on of course, expanding the table of dialogue to include more factions, important factions, important political factions to sit on a table of dialogue. Why? Here is a big question. Do you want to make the dialogue a failure? No. And for this reason, we're saying let's expand the table. I don't want to, of course, discuss concerning those who represent certain groups on the table of dialogue. And I'm not calling for cancelling out any certain political figure. No, this is not something which is raised. Now, let's forget, of course, the foundations which the invitations were built on, the invitations concerning those to attend the table of dialogue. What I want to say is the national table of national dialogue must be expanded to include very, very important national figures. The question is now, why did you agree to discuss the national defense strategy before July with the presence of 14 factions, and why didn't you request expanding the table of national dialogue at that time? Why do you want it now? So what they accuse us of is to disrupt the dialogue. Before July 2006, we agreed just to include the 14 groups. Now you ask me the question, what's the difference between now and 2006, the last session, 2 years ago? The difference is the Israeli war. The Israeli war changed the country, it changed the region, and today I'll tell you it changed the world. Very modestly, I'll tell you, very frankly, it changed the world. It changed many of the military academies. There's a big difference between now and then. And the most important issue for us, let me tell you, is morals. Just like we acted with the government, there is a political group in Lebanon which had a role in the war, and they, of course, they played a role which was not understandable. We didn't understand their role at that time. But there are certain important Lebanese groups who stood side by side with the resistance in the war. They supported the resistance and they made sacrifices. And of course, they tied their destiny to the destiny of the resistance, because had the resistance been destroyed, their existence would have been destroyed. So the loyalty to those groups which stood with us in the July 2006 war makes us, obliges us to call on them to stand at the head of the table, not on the sides, on the head of the table, which will discuss the issue of protecting Lebanon and defending Lebanon. Because this resistance used to was part of defending Lebanon. So this is the difference. We had the July 2006 war, whereby many groups stood side by side with us, and we want these groups to be represented on the table of dialogue. And I know that during this period, we'll have consultations with many of the political factions to achieve certain goals. So when everyone takes part, we'll be able to discuss, to make a serious, responsible discussion. And of course, we are not saying this because we want to, of course, try and put someone in the corner. No, what the opposition represents and what we're trying to defend, let them be three or four. But they make up, for us, they represent 1 million. The issue is not about number. It's not because we want certain figures to sit on the table of national dialogue to support our position concerning national defense strategy. It's a strategic destiny and issue of morals, of loyalty. All of those groups who stood with the resistance and who stood with Lebanon and maintained, kept Lebanon alive and defended Lebanon and helped Lebanon be victorious, these groups must be represented on the table of national dialogue. And here,